You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Happy anniversary.
This album's celebrating an anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
Hey, happy new year, happy anniversary.
I was supposed to say happy new year, but then anniversary was in my mind.
Anniversary?
Happy new year, yeah, Sam.
Happy new year. Welcome to 2017. It's good to be back.
Hey, yeah.
So this year, just to clarify things, how anniversary albums works. So when we talk of anniversaries, we're talking 5, 10 years, 15, 20, 25, 30. So multiples of 5, basically.
Yeah.
And this last year, we did albums that were in years that had a 1 or a 6, so 1981, 1986. This year we're doing albums with a 2 or a 7, so 1982, 1987, 2002.
So that's virtually impossible to do every single amazing album from those times.
It is virtually impossible, to be honest. We've only got a limited amount of weeks, and
we've got 52.
We can't fit them all in.
51 weeks.
There's just too many years.
Maybe 50 weeks.
Yeah.
50 chances.
I haven't counted, but all I know is that a lot of the albums I've been looking at doing, there's way too many, and we won't be able to do them all, unfortunately. But we're starting off with a very significant record today, given the times. This one is David Bowie's Heroes from 1977, which is turning 40 this year. And I chose this record because tomorrow is a year to the day since David Bowie passed away, and yesterday was also his birthday, where he would have turned 70. So I deliberately chose this record to start things off this year.
He's almost a phoenix.
He is almost a phoenix, yep. Yep.
And just did it in reverse.
Yeah.
Oh, and, David, I love you, man.
We're not going to get too teary-eyed on air.
Yeah, okay, yes. I already promised. But
yeah, she did promise.
I did promise.
So this album is quite a significant record. It's the second album in Bowie's infamous Berlin trilogy, which was a series of albums he wrote and recorded while living in Berlin in the late 70s. So just a bit of background to that. He moved to Berlin in 1976. He'd been living in LA during what is known as his Thin White Duke period. And during this time, he developed a bit of a cocaine habit. He later revealed this was the darkest period of his life, and he was constantly worried about his sanity. And he also said he had no memory at all of recording his 1976 album Station to Station.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so as you can see, pretty dark times if you're forgetting recording entire albums.
And I think like a lot of artists at the time were dropping off and checking out.
Well, cocaine was at its height in the music industry in that mid-70s.
Yeah.
It was just flooding into America from Colombia.
Yeah. And either they were passing away or their music careers were just obliterated by this drug.
And so he basically moved to Berlin with Iggy Pop, who was also another heavy drug addict, in order to kick the drugs and kind of get out of the spotlight and refresh, kind of thing. And while he was living there, he became interested in German music, particularly artists such as Neu and Kraftwerk and Can and those sorts of people.
Yes.
Who were quite revolutionary at the time, doing sort of electronic music. And he also met Brian Eno, of course, formerly of Roxy Music and, of course, a very famous producer during this period, and became instantly a fan of his kind of ambient music that he was making. And Eno would ultimately end up producing the albums that Bowie made in Berlin. So the trilogy began with Low, released in early 1977, and that was quite successful. So Bowie decided to go straight back into the studio and recorded Heroes, which is the second in this trilogy. And in 1979, he released Lodger, which was the final record in this trilogy. So musically speaking, Heroes is very much influenced by, as I was saying, German music and kind of ambient music that Bowie was being exposed to at the time. It's a very... I would describe it as quite an industrial-sounding record, quite electronic in places.
Yeah.
And in fact, there are a couple of ambient instrumental tracks on this record as well.
Mm.
And compared to his other work, this record and Low, I guess, are far and away more experimental and nothing really like he'd done before. He'd had his glam rock period, and then he went and did soul music, and this was, again, going in a completely different direction, which is kind of what he did throughout his career. He wasn't set on one style. He kept moving.
Transformative.
Yeah. And taking risks as well.
Absolutely.
And I guess at the time, In terms of narrative and lyrics of the record, this album, it's deeply influenced by where it is recorded and the surround. So the studio was actually right next to the Berlin Wall, and Red Guards used to actually spy on the studio through binoculars and like check out what was going on.
So they just watched like history in the making while being history in the making,
exactly.
Which is just ridiculous. I love it.
And the themes of this record actually kind of reflect the division of Berlin during the height of the Cold War, and you know, just this idea of separation, and no one really knows what's going to happen, you know.
Yeah.
Is someone going to drop a nuclear bomb? That kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So it's very much set in the context where it's recorded.
Yeah.
So we're going to start off with the opening track off the record, Beauty and the Beast. And you can get a sense straight away with this track, the overall sort of Kraut rock industrial kind of feel of this record. The guitars and synths are quite disjointed and jerky, and that's quite a common feature across this record. And we also hear on this track for the first time Robert Fripp, who's plays lead guitar on this record and is quite an important component of this record. Fripp, of course, is the founder and guitar player for King Crimson, and he would play on this record and also Scary Monsters, which Bowie released in 1980. So, without further ado.
Thank you.
going to enjoy this. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, so that's Beauty and the Beast. So a very kind of industrial kind of, you know, thing going on. Kind
janky.
Of new wavy.
Is janky.
Janky. There's many adjectives you could probably use to describe that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of...
But how many adjectives can you dance?
Good question. Good
and I
question.
Think that's the question that song poses.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
you just want to dance.
You do, you do. And a lot of these tracks are like that. And I think Bowie was good at this. And keeping, like, experimenting with styles and different musics, but keeping them within, like, a kind of pop template, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. So he's definitely playing with new sounds here, but it's still quite poppy and you can dance to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of the tracks on this record are like that. The next track is keeping again within that pop template. It's called Blackout, and I describe this track as a bit of an industrial banger.
Yeah.
It's kind of up tempo, especially with the guitar, and again industrial sounding. You can hear that with Robert Fripp's screeching guitar line at the start of the track. Yeah, quite experimental, and but retaining that pop dance feel.
Yes,
to it.
Yeah.
And yeah. Bowie
was
very good
at that. I guess like everything around this time had to be designed to be danced to, like.
Well, yeah. I mean, because 77, it's at the height of disco.
It's the basis of all popularity and pop music.
Yeah.
During that time. And I mean, mainly like now as well, but it's, you know, experimentalism has moved its
true.
Way in a bit more.
Yeah.
For people to feel like they don't have to dance.
Mm, mm, mm. And yeah, I mean, Bowie just made album after album full of kind of dance tracks on kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And right. That's definitely the case with this one.
Well, here we go.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
That was Blackout. Yeah, very, very cool track. We're going to move straight along with the next track, Sons of the Silent Age. And this was actually, interestingly enough, the only track on the record that was written before they went and recorded the album. All the other tracks were written during the recording sessions.
That sounds...
Which is quite unusual. Because most of the time people write songs outside the studio. A lot of the time.
Because it's expensive and you're not just a crazy pop star.
Exactly. And lyricists like to just write all the time on the road or in the bedroom or whatever.
I mean, I'd imagine that their quality of, like, you know, what they throw away is probably better than anything that I would write.
So this track was the only one written outside the studio. And this is more of a ballady kind of soul track. It's kind of slower than the other tracks on the record. It actually also features Bowie on saxophone. And not many people know this, but he was a pretty good sax player.
Yes.
And did play a lot of saxophone on his records. And this track has a very distinctive sax line at the start of the track. So, yeah.
Look out for the sax line.
Look it out.
Silent age, stand on platforms, blank books and notebooks, sit in back rows of city limits, lay in bed, coming and going on easy terms. Sons of the silent age, pace their rooms like a cell's dimension, rise for a year or two, then make war. Search through their one-inch thoughts, then decide it couldn't be done. Silent age, listen to tracks by Sound Therapy and King Dice. Sons of the silent age, pick up in bars and cry only once. Sons of the silent age, make love only once, but dream and dream. Don't walk, they just glide in and out of life. They never die, they just go to sleep one day.
Theatrics, I love it.
That was, that was quite a cool track. I like.
He took
it
to church, you know.
He did, yeah, he very did. Gospely, and it kind of makes sense because a couple of years prior to this record, he did release an entire album of soul music.
So, yeah.
He's got a soulful voice.
He has a soul.
Yeah, he has a soul.
Yeah,
yeah, and he has a soul on this next track, which is called "The Secret Life of Arabia." And this is the closing track on the record, and it's a bit of a funky number, so kind of continuing with that soul vibe, particularly in the rhythm track. And this, I think his vocal performance on this track is exceptionally good. He moves between some quite high falsetto vocals and then these quite low bass notes, which kind of showed off his range. He's got quite an extensive range, and he could mix it up when he wanted to vocally.
Mm.
Yeah.
Cool. Enjoy. Hello everyone. How did you enjoy that? I did very much, Lee.
Yeah, The Secret Life of Arabia. Really cool track.
It's a really nice groovy track.
It is. A lot of these tracks are. So the album, just looking at the reception legacy of this record, so it was commercially and critically successful. It reached number 3 in the UK, and both Melody Maker and The Enemy named it the album of the year. So high praise indeed. And it's now considered one of his best albums. And the trilogy itself, the three albums that he really recorded in Berlin, many see it as kind of his creative peak. And definitely right up there in terms of the works he released. I think it was definitely an album that stood apart from quite a lot that was going on in music at the time, especially music that was being made from artists from Bowie's generation. None of them were making music quite as daring and experimental as this, I don't think. Bowie really was the only artist from the early 70s generation that kind of embraced German music to such an extent, and ambient music. And I think it really worked for him. He did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I guess it was during a time of political turmoil as well. So
Yes.
Very controversial move.
Yeah, very controversial move. And
but who isn't more highly controversial than David Bowie?
I know, exactly. he wouldn't have probably cared anyway. he would continue with this ethos of experimenting and trying new sounds, taking risks musically right up to his death with the album Black Star, of course. And if you look right through his career, this is the pattern that is quite consistent. He started life as a mod pop kind of singer, then became a folky, then a glam rocker, released a soul album, then went and did all this kind of experimental German-influenced music, then became like an 80s pop star. He's constantly evolving. That's why people call him the chameleon.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not stuck in the same kind of box.
Yeah.
He's constantly moving and changing and leading the way, which was why he was such a great musician. So, all things considered, we're going to finish with the title track of the album Heroes. And this is, of course, one of Bowie's most well-known and best-loved tracks. Some even say it's his greatest song. And I think this song, more than any other on the record, captures perfectly, I think, the overall feel of this record and perhaps the time. As lyrically, it's kind of, as I said at the top of the show, it's kind of about the story of division between East and West Berlin. And it's actually about a story of two lovers, one from East Berlin and one from West Berlin, whom, although they are divided by the structure, they're still brought together by love. And physical boundaries can't prevent them from coming together. And he was actually inspired, incidentally, by an actual real-life story by the second producer of this record and his long-term producer, Tony Visconti, who embraced his girlfriend by the Berlin Wall, and Bowie was a witness to this. So that was kind of what the song was kind of based around. That's where he got influence from. And then it developed into this kind of narrative about the two lovers being separated, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah.
Well, thank you.
This song is held in very high regard and is considered one of the greatest songs of all time. Rolling Stone voted it the 46th greatest song of all time, and Enemy the 15th best song of all time. So it's high props there.
But yeah, thank you very much for coming in.
No, and, pleasure.
And everybody at home and in your car or wherever at work, you know what to do. Turn it up and have a dance. Or maybe just like a slow, you know, hug or something.
A slow hug.
Yeah, you know what to do.
happy anniversary to that album.
Happy anniversary.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.